Hey everyone, welcome to the Faith Chapel podcast. We are so glad to have you join us. Faith Chapel exists to help people follow Jesus, be transformed by Jesus, and be on mission with Jesus. No matter where you are on your spiritual journey, you're welcome here. If you have any questions about who we are or what you hear, you can visit faithchapel.cc or email podcast@faithchapel.cc. We'd love to hear from you. All right, let's dive into this week's message.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Evan. If we have not met, I get the privilege of being a pastor here on staff. My primary role is to work with college age and young adults, but I also get to hang out with junior hires and high schoolers every once in a while and be a part of our young marrieds ministry. And so we're in 2021. We made it. We're here. And I'm just so glad that whether you are in the room or you're watching online, you've prioritized being a part of a faith community. And we're going to dig into the word together today. So what I want to talk about this weekend is following Jesus, which is kind of the whole reason that we're here. We did a series in our college and young adult ministry simply entitled Follow. And the tagline of it was Conversations Through the Invitations of Jesus. And so what we're going to do this morning is we're going to look at a famous invitation from Jesus, and then we're going to look at a passage in John where Jesus kind of describes what it means to follow him. But before we do that, would you just pray with me? Heavenly Father, we love you. Would you teach us something new this morning? Would you remind us of a truth that maybe we've let go of? Lord, you are good. We love you in your name. Amen. Amen. So, one of the most famous invitations of Jesus found in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 4, verses 18 through 22. It says this: As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once, they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. This passage seems pretty straightforward, but I think that there are some questions that we can ask ourselves today that are actually really challenging. And the first question would be this: How much is our comfort worth? How much is our comfort worth? I think it can be really easy for us to assume that Jesus is just coming and making this call and saying, like, hey, stop doing that job and come do this job. Like, you're just leaving one thing to start something new. But what we have to understand is that this wasn't an easy call by any stretch that Jesus was making to these young men. He was asking them to leave their family trade. He was asking them to leave their livelihood, their comfort, their stability. Everything that they had built in their culture was rooted in being fishermen. And Jesus was saying, hey, I need you and I want you to leave that and come with me. They were leaving their position and culture. And Jesus was relatively unknown at this time. There was a little bit of buzz about this new rabbi, but it wasn't like this celebrity came in and was like, hey, I want you to leave that and come be a part of this amazing thing. And I think it's kind of hard for us because we have to ask ourselves the question, are we willing to leave the comfort of what we know for what Jesus has for us? You see, their comfort was found in that, and our comfort is found in so many different things, and regularly we are going to have to ask ourselves the question, am I willing to set down what's comfortable for what Jesus wants to hand to me? Am I willing to leave what I've built for what Jesus wants to build in me? What I love is that the disciples' response is at once and immediately. You see, you and I get the privilege of living on this side of the death and resurrection of Jesus. We know the story. We know what happened. But the disciples, they weren't assured of anything. Like, they were kind of excited about who this guy was, and he was obviously like a people person. People followed him. He had an unbelievable message, all of these things. But they didn't know definitively that he was the Messiah. And so I try to put myself in that place, and I'm like, yeah, if Jesus showed up face to face and was like, you, I want you to come follow me, I would love to say, yeah, I would drop my net at once and immediately, but I don't know if I would. But I love that the disciples did, and it leads us in to the next question. Are we willing to act with anticipation instead of procrastination? Any other procrastinators in the room? There's not nearly enough of you raising your hands right now, because I know people are like, no, I don't procrastinate. I am a huge procrastinator. We just got through Christmas season, and it's always really interesting. I'll talk to people in like the summer, like June, July, and they'll be like, yeah, I just bought a Christmas gift for my husband. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Why are you thinking about that? I don't think you're supposed to do that till like the 20th of December. Like around then, that's when you start Christmas shopping. This has been a part of my life for a really long time, and it really reared its head when I was in college. I made a really smart decision to work full-time as a server and try to complete a bachelor's degree in 3 years. So what that meant was 24 credits a semester on top of 40 hours a week of working. And the only way that I could physically do that was to take half of my classes online. And if you've ever done an online college course or you know someone who has, this is just the simple premise of it. Is here's all your work, it's due by 11:59 on Sunday night. Which is really bad for a procrastinator, because what I would do is I would work Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights, because as a server, that's when it's busiest. That's when you have the opportunity to make the most tips. And so I would do that, and I fully understand I could have worked on schoolwork Monday through Thursday, but it wasn't really an option in my mind. And so what I would do is I would get done with my night shift on Sunday nights around 9:30, and I'd be like, all right, here we go, 2 hours to get all of this schoolwork done. The problem was that I ended up getting pretty good grades, so I would just justify it the next week and the next week and the next week. Somehow, I got my degree and I made it out. But here's the thing. When it comes to procrastination and our relationship with Jesus, the only thing that we're really doing is delaying the promises of God. All we're doing is missing out on the full week of what God has for us. If we use this metaphor, and we have the option to either get stretched or challenged for an entire week, or we can give God that 2 hours at the end of the week. I don't know about you, but I would rather give God the full week, because I think that there will be a lot more accomplished in me if I'm willing to steadily work towards who Jesus is calling me to be instead of just giving him this little piece at the end of my week. I think that this is what it comes down to, is that Jesus wants us to be people who are steadily following him, and he wants us to be consistent. And what he knew about these men, He knew them at their absolute core. He knew their skills. He knew their gifts. He knew everything about them. He knew that he had created them in a very specific way. And he knew what they were capable of on their own. But he also knew that if they said yes to following him, that all of their good would become great if they gave him the chance. And like the disciples, you and I are capable of so much. God has created us with unique gifts and abilities and talents, and we have to understand that we are only capable of all of the things that Jesus has for us if we lean in and say yes to who Jesus is. And I think a question would be, what are we waiting for? There's no better day than today, and I'm not just saying that because it's the first weekend in January, like new year, new me, this is the year. Like that's not what we're talking about here. What I'm saying is that I don't care if it was August, there's no better day than today to say yes to what Jesus is calling us to. Because he wants to use your unique gifts and talents and all of those things to love people the way that he loves people, to show them the grace and the mercy of Jesus. What are we waiting for? And here's the thing. This is the amazing thing about the call of God, is that it doesn't just happen once. I think that there's this perception that we have that the call of God happens one time in our life, and you either take it or you miss it. But that's not how it works. It's every single day. Jesus calls us every single day to specific things and to things that we should be doing our entire lives. And this is what that means. That if you missed the call, whether it was 15 minutes ago, 50 years ago, whatever it is, we don't have time to sulk in missed opportunities because Jesus has a new one for us today. What that also means is that if we have said yes to the opportunities and the call of God throughout our life, that's amazing, but we only have a little bit of time to pat ourselves on the back because there's a new one today. That we don't live in what was, we live in what is, and that is Jesus and the new calling that he brings fresh every single morning for us to love people specifically in our spheres of influence, to lead people towards him, to make sure that we take all the attention off of ourselves and put it straight on to Jesus. So, as Jesus makes this call to these men, he says, I'm gonna make you fishers of men, or I'm gonna have you fish for people. So what the heck does that mean? If you're like me, you grew up in the church and you heard that phrase a lot, and I was like, yeah, I think I get it. Like, it makes sense. But then I also always struggled with it a little bit because I'm like, how do you fish for people? This summer, I got the privilege of being at all of our church camps up at Camp on the Boulder. And our junior high pastor, Mikey, is an incredible fly fisherman. And he's an incredible teacher. And I haven't fly fished very much in my life. I think I'd fly fished once or twice before this summer. And so he's like, hey, if you want to go, I'll like teach you some stuff. And we can go on the Boulder River and you can fly fish. And I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. So we woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And we went down to the Boulder River. It was like 34 degrees outside in the morning, and which meant that the river was like 10 degrees. And I'm wearing chacos and shorts, just like a fool, like out there in the middle of the river casting. And he's so patient. And I'm getting my line stuck in the tree. And he has this, all this patience. I finally caught a fish. But this is the thing about fly fishing. It's hunting. Like it's hunt. You are hunting fish because you are making the fly look as natural as possible. And then they take that fly and you set the line and you bring it in, and there's nothing quite like that feeling. And as I'm looking at this idea of fishing for people, all I could think of is this is a terrible metaphor. This is a terrible metaphor. I don't want to hook anybody or trick anybody into following Jesus. But here's the thing, is that Jesus was talking specifically to specific men in a specific time in a specific culture, and when he said it, they knew exactly what he was talking about. Because Jesus knew their skill set. He knew their skill set, and he knew that they were observant. He knew that they were discerning. He knew that they were patient. He knew that they were careful. He knew that they were studious. He knew that they took time to study the water. They knew where and when to fish. They knew exactly what to do. They were patient. They were so many different things. And Jesus goes, that skill set translates perfectly. That skill set, these men are going to reach people like other people won't. And I think what's important for you and I to understand today is that Jesus knows our skill set as well. He looks at us and he sees our traits and he sees our qualities and he goes, yeah, that's going to translate. I know exactly how I would position them. I know exactly how I would use them in their relationships to make sure that people know that they are loved by a perfect God. I don't know about you, but it's so easy for us to disqualify ourselves. It's so easy for me to disqualify myself and say, I'm not worthy to lead anyone towards Jesus. I'm messy and broken. And Jesus goes, yeah, I know. But I'm going to use all your gifts and I'm going to use all your skill sets. In fact, 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 5 through 6 says this, there are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but in all of them and in everyone is the same God at work. I think it can be really easy for us to create this perfect model of what a disciple of Jesus looks like. It could be a person that we kind of idolize, or it can just be like this checklist of things that we try to fulfill, and like, this is what it looks like, and rarely is it what we are very good at. Here's the thing. Jesus isn't asking us to be anyone else. He's asking us to be the best version of ourselves because he has created us uniquely. It's what's amazing about being created by a perfect creator is that there is not another you. There's not another me. That there's not anybody who has the exact same blend of personality and skills and gifts and passions. And yet we find ourselves so often trying to be other people. When I stepped on a staff, I knew very little. I still know very little, let's be honest. But 7 years ago, I stepped on staff, and I cannot tell you how much of a privilege it is to work on this staff. I grew up idolizing a ton of people that worked here, and now I work with so many of them. And as an intern, it was really easy for me to look at people and just be like, I just want to be that and that and that. And I was not spending any time working on who I was. And it wasn't like a healthy, like, I'm going to learn from you. It was like, that was a really good phrase that you just used in that conversation. I'm stealing it. And then I would go and like use it in another conversation. Be like, wow, you're really wise for somebody in their early 20s. I'd be like, I know, even though it was something that somebody said that's 4 decades older than me. And I had this interaction with a man by the name of Ron Todd. So many of you know him. And we lost him a couple months ago to a heart attack. And Ron was a mentor and a friend. And at the time was my direct supervisor. And he walked into the office that I was sharing with another guy. And he put his finger in my chest like he does. And lovingly. And he said, buddy boy, you need to stop trying to be a little bit of everybody else and just be all that God has asked you to be. And it wrecked me. And it changed me, not just in my ministry and the way that I pursued that, but in the way that I lived my life, because I had been comparing myself to everyone else. And we're all guilty of that. We see people in our professions that do the same thing. And we're like, oh, I wish I could do it the way that they do it. And we compare ourselves time and time again to the people around us. And there's a quote by Theodore Roosevelt that just simply says, comparison is the thief of joy. And it's true. Because God isn't asking us to sever all of the passions that he's placed in our life so that we can be shoved into a mold of someone else. He's saying, no, I want you to use the gifts and talents and skills and passions that I've placed in you to the best of your ability. Now, are there things we can learn from other people? Obviously. There are a dozen, two dozen people on this staff that I would sit in their office all day long and just glean information from them if I could. But God isn't asking me to be Nate Petzl or Mark Johnson or Steve Petzl or anybody else. He's asking me to be me. And will there be pruning? Yeah, yeah, there's gonna be a lot of pruning. God's gonna work in our lives and he's gonna cut off dead things so new, beautiful things full of life can grow. But he isn't asking us to be other people. He knows our skill set and he wants to use us. He also knew the disciples' position. At the time that Jesus is making this request, Rome has conquered the known world. They own everything. So there's not a body of water that these men could fish on that Rome didn't own, which meant that they were fishing not only for their own life and livelihood and the livelihoods of their family, but they are also being taxed and extorted by the Roman government. And as Jesus is asking them to cast aside their nets, he's asking them to leave that and step into something that he is about to do. And that thing is challenging political systems, religious systems, emotional systems, spiritual systems. And what Jesus understood is that his ministry here on earth was only going to be about 3 years long. And he knew that their ministry was going to last a lot longer than that. And so he wanted them to step in and see how he challenged everything, how he was going to flip culture upside down. And he wanted them to be a part of that. He wanted them to learn how to do just that. You see, the gospel, the message of Jesus, is called good news. But then, just like now, Jesus understood a couple things, that if it isn't good news, it's not God. And if it isn't good news for all people, it's not God. Jesus wanted to take ordinary people from every walk of life and use them to teach extraordinary truths. He took fishermen and tax collectors. He used doctors. He used murderers. And he said, I'm going to take ordinary people and do extraordinary things through them. It's so important that we understand that he knows our skill sets and that he isn't concerned with our social positions or our spheres of influence. He knows that the kingdom will thrive when ordinary, humble people are willing to lean into the amazing, extraordinary message of Jesus. That if we would stop thinking about what disqualifies and start thinking about who qualifies us, we will be so incredibly effective. The next passage I'm going to look at is in the Gospel of John, and it's an interaction between Jesus and some of the religious people at the time. And we have to set the stage a little bit here. It's important for us to understand that as Jesus is coming onto the scene, not everybody's super excited about it, even though he's bringing this incredible message of hope. The Roman government, while it's just like a buzz at the time, isn't super excited about religious uprisings because it never leads to anything good. And the people who really didn't want Jesus around were the religious elites, because they had had a relationship with Rome and they had position and they had titles and they had money, and those things don't lead to somebody wanting the narrative to change. So Jesus steps in and he's speaking to a group of people who are probably a combination of religious elites and regular Jewish people celebrating. But these regular Jewish people are being inundated from a message from the people above them. And they're confused because other people had come and said that they were the Messiah before. And so there was all of these different questions that they had. And Jesus steps in and has a rather harsh conversation. John chapter 10, verses 22 through 26. Then came the festival of dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple courts walking in Solomon's colonnade. The Jews who were there gathered around him, saying, how long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly. Jesus answered, I did tell you, but you do not believe. The works I do in my Father's name testify about me, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep. You are not my sheep. rough, Jesus. Just looking people in the eye and saying a hard truth. I think that we can probably understand a little bit of Jesus' frustration. It's really interesting. At this point in his ministry, he actually hadn't publicly affirmed his messiahship to anyone but the woman at the well. And if you're not familiar with the story of the woman at the well, that's one that I would really have you Google immediately after church, because it is absolutely unbelievable. The premise is this, is that Jesus gets to talk to a woman who is not Jewish. And she says, I know that they're waiting for the Messiah. And he says, I'm him. And it's amazing because Jesus, like he always does, is flipping culture on its head. He's challenging every type of social norm. A rabbi wasn't supposed to talk to a woman, really, especially a Gentile woman. And yet she's the one that he decides to have that conversation with. But his ministry had been full of miracles and sermons and conversations, incredible things, like blind people were seeing and lame people were walking. And yet the Jewish people are like, hey, could you just tell us plainly? And he's like, what? Like, the works that I do in my Father's name, they testify about me, but you're asking me to just tell you plainly. I think we fall into the same trap. I think that we look at what God is doing in us and through us and I'm like, but could you simplify it? Could you make it easier? Could you just make it plain? The problem is that the Jewish people at the time weren't really paying attention. So a question that we can ask ourselves is, are we? Are we paying attention? I think so many of us have been frustrated with situations in our life. And we'd love that if in our faith, if everything was just black and white and that there was no gray area and that everything was just super clear and that every time we had a question, there was a flashing billboard that just said, this is what you should do. It would be great. It's just not the way that it works. But you see, we have to ask ourselves the question, am I willing to pay attention to Jesus? Am I waiting for him to knock down the door? Or am I willing to lean into him and say, Lord, I am ready. I'm here. I think the problem is this. I think we put pressure on Jesus to reveal answers instead of ourselves trying to get to know Jesus better in the first place. See, a majority of the Jewish people didn't want to take the time to figure out who Jesus actually was, and that's the same thing that happens to us. But what we would probably all agree on is the relationships that are closest in our lives are the ones that we spend the most time with. That the people we know the best are the people that we physically spend the most time with. We have conversations. We spend time getting to know them. And that's true of our horizontal relationships here on earth, and it's true of our vertical relationship with Jesus, is that if we aren't willing to spend time and lean into who Jesus is and try to figure out what his heart is, that the answers are not quite as clear. I think about all the relationships that I have on earth and the closest ones that I have, my wife, my kids. I just had an interaction as I was preparing this message. I was sitting at our kitchen table, and I had my headphones in. I was working on it. On the message, and my kids were like just meandering, like in my peripheral vision. And I knew that they wanted something, but I was like, I need to do this. I need to get this done. And so I'm working on it, and like 10 minutes go by, and I get done, and I shut my computer, and I take my headphones out. And not like 3 seconds later, my 7-year-old son, he's like, hey, Dad. I'm like, hey, buddy, what's up? Can we have a piece of candy? Yeah, you can have a piece of candy. And so as they're walking to the pantry, I hear him to my 6-year-old daughter, I told you it was a better time to ask him. I was like, God, sucker, he knows me. He knows exactly. Because he knew if he interrupted me, then I'd probably be like, you can just wait. Like, just, I'm super patient all the time. I was just like, you can wait. But he knew. He knew me. He's taken time to get to know me. He studied me. But I think about all the relationships in my life, the closest relationships, the little things. Questions don't usually even have to be asked because I know those people so well and they know me so well that those little things don't have to happen. And what happens is when the big things come up, we're already prepared because we don't have 1,000 little questions to ask before we get to the big one. I think that's like our relationship with Jesus. The more we get to know the heart of God, the little questions are answered very, very quickly. We already know how he wants us to handle 95% of our situations. And then when the big life-altering situations come up, we're more ready to access the heart of God because we're already close to it. We need to be people who are paying attention to who Jesus is. So what does Jesus have to say about those that are his sheep? It goes on to say in verse 27, my sheep listen to my voice, I know them, and they follow me. They listen to my voice, I know them, and they follow me. So the first point is this, is that his sheep listen to his voice. The shepherd-sheep narrative was absolutely crucial for the context of the time, the culture at the time, but I still think it's really applicable for us today. I don't know if it's just because we live in Montana and some of us have spent time around sheep. But what was amazing is if you looked at the culture and these shepherds who had hundreds of sheep, a single shepherd could make a command and hundreds of sheep obey. Because the sheep recognized the voice of their shepherd, and they knew that that voice was leading them to green pastures. They knew that that voice was leading them to safety or away from danger. And it was a mark then as it is now of people who believe that Jesus is who he said he is because they assign his voice priority and authority. And so do we assign the voice of God authority and priority in our lives? So I want to backtrack just a couple verses 22 through 23, which at the time seem a little bit inconsequential, but if we read them in context, they actually hold a ton of value. It says this, it says, "Then came the festival of dedication of Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple courts walking in Solomon's colonnade." As Jesus is walking in the outer courts of the temple, the Jewish people are celebrating Hanukkah. They're celebrating their kings, they're celebrating their victories, they're celebrating their culture, they're celebrating everything. And Jesus picks this moment to have the hard conversation. Jesus is Jewish. Like, he's not knocking them for celebrating, he's probably celebrating along with them. He's all about the Jewish culture. But he steps in, he says, "Hey, this is fine, like this is all great, you're celebrating, awesome. I have a conversation to have with you and it's a hard one. I just need you to know that I'm here. And all of this is here." That's rough. That's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of Jewish people. But it's an incredible reminder for us today. We can be celebrating so many good things. We can be surrounded by so many good influences. But we still have to be people who assign the voice of God the appropriate amount of authority in our lives. That it is the most influential thing of why we do what we do. That no matter what culture is saying, no matter what our family is saying, no matter what our friends or our bosses or anybody else is saying, that the influence that takes priority is Jesus. And that can be really difficult for us to do, but it will change everything if we let that be a truth in our life. Secondly, is the most obvious point for a sermon about following it is this, is sheep follow him. And while it's incredibly obvious, here's the thing. Actively listening for the voice of God and actively recognizing the voice of God should lead us to actively responding to the voice of God. It's not just about hearing it and recognizing it, it's about obeying it. And that's a lot more difficult. We don't get to say like, "Yes, like I know what God's asking me to do," and then not do anything about it. The call for us is to be people who are obedient to that call. As Jesus is taking the time to speak into our lives, that we would say, "Yeah, I'm here for it. I'm all about it." I think it'd be really awesome if Jesus just showed up into a room or our house every day and for 5 minutes he just affirmed us and said, "You're awesome, champ. Keep doing what you're doing." And that was just a relationship with Jesus. But if you've been following Jesus for any amount of time, you know that that's not how it goes. It is a lot of affirmation and love, but it's also some challenge and some conviction. For me, I feel the love of God when he takes the time to challenge me in specific situations. And sometimes it's tough love because I probably make more mistakes than I have successes. When I did step on staff here, I was leaving the service industry to possibly take an internship here. And my mentor was the one who invited me. And he said, "Hey, I think you'd be great at this." And I said, "That's really flattering. I'm 23 and everybody else is 18. And he's like, "Yep." And I'm like, "Cool, I could be like the old guy, the old 23-year-old intern who doesn't know what he's doing with his life." And he's like, "Yeah, exactly." And I was like, "Okay, cool." So I said, "Hey, I'm going to pray about it," which is like the most typical Christian answer. "I'll pray about it." But I did. I prayed about it. And the Lord really pressed upon me like, "Yes, this is what you should be doing." So I called him up and I said, "Hey man, no thanks," and I hung up the phone. Because I was scared. I was acting in fear. The path that I had semi-planned out for myself didn't include that. And I didn't trust the voice of God enough. And I think that that's a question that we have to ask ourselves. That as we recognize the voice of God, do we trust him enough to obey? See, Jesus goes on to say in the same passage in verses 28 through 30, I give them eternal life and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand, and I and the Father are one. Jesus had no problem giving assurances and promises time and time and time again throughout Scripture, but we have to land on whether or not we believe him. That when Jesus makes a promise or an assurance or makes a call on our life, do we believe that is the best thing for us, or would we rather hold on to what we believe is the best thing for us? Do we believe him? The next 10 verses or so talk about how the Jewish people get really angry at the conversation that Jesus is having with them naturally. And so they turn to, like, we're gonna stone you and you're possessed by a demon. Those are the only options here. And so Jesus, not being his time to be crucified, escapes that. And then there's 3 verses that wrap up chapter 10. This is what it says. Then Jesus went back across the Jordan to the place where John, this being John the Baptist, had been baptizing in the early days. There he stayed, and many people came to him. They said, though John never performed a sign, all that John said about this man was true. And in that place, many believed in Jesus. At first, I just kind of blasted through these last 3 verses because I thought the Apostle John was just tying like a nice little bow on the end of the chapter. But when you read this again, it's absolutely incredible because Jesus is going back to the place of John the Baptist, and John the Baptist is the person that Jesus just described for the previous 15 verses. That John the Baptist was a perfect example of a sheep. He was the one who recognized the voice of God, who was obedient to the voice of God, who led people towards Jesus because he was willing to use his skill set to do exactly what Jesus, what God had been asking him to do. In chapter 1 of Luke, if you ever go there, it describes the birth of John the Baptist, and it says that he was going to be set apart. It describes the exact type of man that he was going to be, and he leaned into that, and he was faithful to that. And I love the phrase that says that John the Baptist was going to prepare the way for the one. He's going to prepare the way for the one. And then in these last 3 verses, we see that Jesus goes back to the place that John the Baptist is baptizing and preaching, and many people are saved. See, John the Baptist tilled the soil that Jesus harvested. John the Baptist prepared the way because he was faithful to the call. He used his unique gifts and talents to till the soil. And if that can be said about you, if that can be said about me, if at the end of our lives, man, you tilled the soil and Jesus harvested it, that many people believed in the love of Jesus because of your life. It speaks to this incredible truth that our willingness to listen and follow in our own lives will lead other people to do the same. And if somebody can say, hey, you tilled the soil well so Jesus could harvest it, I'd say that's a big, big win. So as we enter 2021, would we be people who understand and recognize the invitation of Jesus for us to use everything that we are, everything that we possess to lead other people towards his love and his grace and his mercy?
We hope that this helps you take your next step on your spiritual journey. If you'd like to get involved with the work and ministry of Faith Chapel, visit faithchapel.cc and click on Next Steps. If you'd like to speak to a pastor or connect with us in any way, email connect@faithchapel.cc. We look forward to connecting with you soon.